This is Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars with Trevor Long and Stephen Fenwick. Thanks to NRMA Insurance and Uniden.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Proudly brought to you by NRMA Insurance, helping over 3 million people across Australia protect the things they care about. And Uniden smart dash cams. Check out the new Dash View 60 range. Techguide.com.au, EFTM.com. We've reviewed them. They're great devices. You've got to have a dash cam in your car. Definitely. Stephen, welcome.
G'day, Trev. How's things? How you been driving?
Yes,
loving. We've got a few drawer cars to talk about in future shows. We've been getting through the cars.
I've been
we?
Deep in the Hyundai and Genesis yes. ecosystem. Did love the Ioniq 5 for the last week, and just been in the Ioniq 6, which you can take now. I think you'll love that. It's an interesting vehicle to look at.
I've had the Mustangs and the MGs, and we've gone through a lot of them.
We got a lot of cars, and we're going to drive a lot of cars. There was a lot of cars coming. I published an article this week on EFTM.com about like 10 electric cars coming this year that some of them I didn't even know about. There is a lot of cars coming, folks. Like, it's not just a fad anymore. It's real. So
it's here.
We've got lots to unpack there. We're going to talk to another EV owner today who has put down some money and is looking at something very special as well, which is interesting. And we are going to unpack vehicle-to-grid, V2G, with a professor.
Yes.
So we're going to be outsmarted for the first time in a long
Much
time.
Much smarter than the two blokes.
Professor Stuart White from the University of Technology in Sydney is going to talk to us about V2G, and I think you are going to learn something.
So V2G is vehicle-to-grid. Did you say
That's
that
it.
Already?
There's V2G, vehicle-to-load.
Yep.
V2H, vehicle-to-home. V2G, vehicle-to-grid. And it's a technology a lot of people know about, and I think we might blow some people's
explain
minds.
What it means? Like, basically,
your car battery
in your car can power your
power.
Home.
Yeah. It can output power to power a single thing or the entire
and put
grid.
Back on the grid. Yeah.
So that is awesome and really exciting. But Stephen, you've been frustrated.
Yes, I have.
By a charging problem, which I think is not a unique problem for you. There are other people going to feel the same way.
Oh, yeah. And like, luckily, my frustration was at a local charger. So I could luckily, there was more than one. I was at a charging spot where there were actually 6 chargers in 4 spaces. So you could have your choice. No, sorry, 4 chargers in 4 spaces. And 3 of them were not working at one time. 3 of them said, I tried to connect. And on the app, it was the ChargeFox app, and I was looking there, and it said, ready to charge. And it normally, when you plug your car in, on the app, it says ready to charge. Like you press start, and nothing was happening. Mm. So I had to change to another one, same deal, change to the third one, and it finally then changed to ready to charge. Now, that's frustrating in itself, but luckily I could just go to the next one and use that. And the beauty of where this is arranged is no matter which of the 4 spots you're in, you can access all 4 of the chargers. They've got really long cables.
Oh, wow.
So, it's really convenient. So it doesn't matter where you park. So if someone's parked near that charger, the car on the other side could still access it and vice versa. So that's really good. But when they're not working, not very good. But I remember I was with a mate who saw me plugging the car in. Imagine if this was on a long trip and you're thinking, what am I going to do now?
And it's first impressions. You remember my story about Siri, the first time I ever used Siri and said, I asked Siri to call my wife and it said, which wife? And I'm like, okay. What are you doing?
You've got a harem, have you?
And like from that moment, I was kind of put off by the concept of voice assistants. I've obviously come around. But a lot of people, you introduce them to your electric car and you take them to a charger or they ask you a question. They hear this story and they think that's how it is. And you're like, oh, no.
Don't get it. Yeah,
but the fact is, it is a real problem. And your local problem is overcomable because you can probably just go home. But on a road trip, It's a massive, massive problem that you have to. And we talked about it last week, how many apps you got to have.
Yeah.
The fact that you've even got to check the app in advance. Like, if you had a petrol car, you wouldn't check. You might check the price of petrol on where to go, but you're not going to check if the bowsers are working.
The bowsers are working. Totally right. Exactly.
So to have to go to that trouble is just wrong. Well, and that's the challenge we've got is I've found that the best way, weirdly, is to look at PlugShare, which is the, user-generated content. And if I'm driving somewhere, like we're going to drive to Young in a few weeks in the Kia, so I'll probably plan to stop twice, Pheasant's Nest and Young. I'll just charge there, but just because I won't need to, but just for safety's sake, and I won't look at the ChargeFox or Ampol or any of those apps. I'll go to PlugShare, And yeah. I'll go, has anyone charged today? Like, yeah. when's the last time someone used it? Because normally a frustrated user will say it's not working.
It'll update the app. Yeah, true. And the other apps, that's something lacking in the other apps. They should have a report, like report. Some of them might have it, but it's not really prominently displayed.
I thought ChargeFox did show well that something was out of order or not in use.
And you think about it, it's not only an inconvenience to the driver, but it's also they're losing money.
Yeah.
Their charges, if they're working, they're making money. Yeah. So I think either side, there should be a little bit more vigilance around getting them working.
I think weirdly, we're too early to say the market can look after itself. Like if BP had a continual problem with their Bowsers, people just go to Shell, right? Yeah. But the problem is everything is strategically placed so that, you know, ChargeFox has got this point and then the next point. You can't say we'll just go to the next one. So you kind of need the government to say, guys, you need a percentage level up time or you need, I don't know, the app to show. Like we probably need the government to in some way enforce a responsible user policy or something like that.
It should also be, I find, like, because I'm used to charging, I know what I need to do.
Yeah.
There needs to be clearer instructions and there's little digital readouts and you're trying to work out, do I need to read this? It needs to be a bit simpler.
Mate, they just shouldn't put tap and go on the bloody things.
Yeah.
You know?
They should,
The BP Pulse ones, I think it was, or maybe it was the new NRMA one. Might have been the new NRMA one in Young Walker that I saw.
Yeah.
Had a tap-and-go terminal, but I tapped my card and it didn't work. Yeah. I don't think it's enabled for credit cards yet, but that's what they need. Forget the apps. Just let me tap, go, and then that kind of takes away all that connectivity part of it, but it still means we need to know if it works.
That's the other panic is if you come to a charger and think, oh, I've got to set up another an account app. And you've got to just do it again, like we spoke about it last week. Put your credit card with another app. It's can be a bit of a chore.
It is a frustration. And I think the reason we happily talk about these frustrations is because we can't sweep them under the carpet.
No.
We have to talk about them so that companies
we
hear
talk about
that
the good
it's a
and bad. We talk about EVs, the good and the bad and the ugly. We're giving you a real view and no mirrors at
good,
your place.
The bad.
Yeah. And the ugly. We're realists. Like we're not going to paint this rosy picture of EVs. Like well, of course we love them and we drive them, but I think for people to appreciate the whole situation and even in their consideration of buying an EV, they need to be aware that there's sometimes the chargers aren't going to work. So it's a really important issue that the charging companies really need to take responsibility and just become a bit more efficient in their repairs if needed to address this problem.
Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars. Get in touch with us. Let us know what frustrates you or what you think could be done about it. Or how you've overcome those kind of problems. Techguide.com.au, EFTM.com, or send us a text 0477 657 657. I don't know why we make stupid movements during those things.
It just can't help it.
Because, you know, we're
videoing
this rubbish. So I think it's going to come back to haunt us at some point.
I've got a bit more of a beat, a bit more of a
rhythm. Oh, you rate yourself, do you?
A bit more rhythm than you do. Anyway.
That'll do me.
Yep.
That will officially do me. Anyway, Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars, thanks to NRMA Insurance and Union in smart dash cams, talking to owners of EVs, people who love EVs, people who are thinking about buying an EV. No matter what your circumstance regarding electric cars, get in touch. Trevor Long, EFTM.com, Stephen Fennick, techguide.com.au. We'd love to hear from you and hopefully share some of your knowledge or answer your questions. Peter's on the line. G'day, Peter.
G'day, DJ Trevor. How are you, mate?
Really good, mate. Really good. Now Pete, you're a bit unique in this scenario because you're a little bit like us. You actually have your own podcast, the All Talk Car podcast, and you therefore drive a few other cars that you don't own. But let's talk firstly about what you own. So what do you own and how long have you had it for, mate?
So at the moment, for about 2 years, I've had a Tesla Model 3 Performance. And it was only a stopgap purchase because I'm a bit of a Porsche fan.
Ooh.
And I've owned two Porsche Macans in the past.
Yep.
And the new one's going all electric. And I thought, I'm not going to dump $160,000 on a culture that I'm not used to. So I thought, let's just buy the Model 3. See if it suits my lifestyle, and then I can then go to the next level. So that's what's prompted my decision.
I assume a show like All Talk means you love cars broadly, right? You're a rev head. So was that the first electric car you'd driven, or was that the first you'd owned, and therefore you wanted to understand whether you're an EV guy?
Yeah, I mean, before I've had performance cars in the past. I could rattle off a whole list. I've had an M3. I've had an A45 Mercedes AMG. I've had performance cars in the past. And when we the Model 3, when we an owner reached out to us and we drove he didn't let us drive it. We were passengers in the Model 3 performance, and we recorded live. And I thought, oh my god, this thing is a rocket.
It's almost like
a four-wheel motorbike.
Yeah, that's true.
The way it accelerates. But you're right, the M3 and the A45s, you had the paddle shift and noise. It was a bit more emotive, where the Tesla as a daily, though, like fuel costs, there's no such thing. We've got a charger here at work. Haven't paid a cent to run it. Haven't had a service in the last 2 years. But you also got to understand, and the listeners out there, that there are some other differences. I mean, everyone talks about, you know, the saving of the running costs, but I don't know about you, Trevor, and Stephen, with your electric car experiences, insurance is a bit of a nightmare.
It certainly is, especially we've got the
performance. Is that a swear word, insurance?
Maybe. I remember I got the Model S like in 2018, and I remember getting quotes for insurance, and they were telling me because of the power of the car, the 0 to 100 is pretty fast, that they considered it a high-powered vehicle.
Well, so here's my very lived experience. Yeah. I have just got an EV9, and the Kia Carnival, it's a replacement vehicle for our family. And so when I rang in for the insurance, I actually hadn't thought about, well, do I cancel the insurance and get a new one? And they go, no, we just keep the policy and we change the car. And I was actually 2 weeks away from the renewal time, right?
Yeah.
So here's the numbers. It was $12 to get the 2 weeks, right? And I think it was $190 more for the year than a Kia Carnival.
Wow.
So actually,
pretty good.
I think
you're pretty good.
It really depends where you look, and it may depend your circumstances two words as well.
With insurance, two words: shop around.
Do your best.
Yeah, definitely.
Big differences, and on the online calculators and insurance companies, you either get a quote or they'll stop you with the ring now. If it stops you at the second page, ring now means it's going to be expensive. Yeah. So do shop around.
But let's talk about your Tesla experience. So you were a convert, like one journey in the car. How has that is it 2 years since you've owned your Tesla?
2 years now.
What do you love about it?
The fact that it's smooth, there's no gearbox. It's just one. And it's not as bad as like a CVT, those variable. It doesn't drone and make it it's just a cruiser. There's no noise. It's smooth. And for city driving, the stereo is amazing. So you can actually hear sounds that didn't exist because the motor would block out, create noises.
That's a good point.
Having silence in the vehicle, you're actually a bit more calmer. I've noticed that even though it's the performance, you do the party trick with everyone, and then after a while, you're just cruising. But when you see a spot to change lanes and you see a gap, you touch that accelerator, and like I said, it's like a four-wheel motorbike.
Now, you mentioned that you're a Porsche man, you'd own a couple. You mentioned in your email to us that you were looking at the new Porsche Macan. You mentioned at the start of this conversation. So they've now announced the Porsche Macan electric. Where are you at on that? Because, you know, Tesla's a great car, but there's part of you that's got to want to go back to Porsche. In the same way, similarly, even though Tesla did, you know, dud Fennec, he went back to Mercedes, pretty much running back to them because it's like your first true love. So is Porsche and a guarantee for you because of, you know, you've probably driven the Taycan, you probably know what they can turn out. It's a great underpinnings of electric at Porsche.
It's the way it's built. If you look at the figures, the distance, the range. If you look at range, you look at the statistics can make you agree or disagree on anything. They're just numbers, and you throw them up in the air. But when you sit inside a Mercedes EV, we've had a number of BMWs, the iX. We've had a number of our Beamers through the door. We did a listener gave us his Taycan 4S for a night. The quality and finish in those vehicles is what. Even though Porsche and the European marks aren't EV cars, where Tesla's got them on the technology, they've got 100 years of experience of putting a car together.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not trying to shit on Tesla. I'm not a Tesla fanboy. I enjoy the product, and I still think they're leaps ahead of the competition when it comes to the EV side of things. The way that these BMWs and Mercs and Porsches are put together, and the Audi, I haven't driven the Audi, but I don't mean they're twins underneath, they are put together with masters that have been building cars for 100 years. So I'm looking forward to that quality and comfort as opposed to the range. And I'm sure the Porsche have had a go with Taycan, and the Taycan's a brilliant piece of machinery. It's just another level when it comes to pricing.
Yeah.
The Macan's going to come in at about 160.
Well, I'm exactly in your shoes, mate, coming from a Tesla after being a Mercedes owner, enjoying the Tesla, but then realizing that, you know what, this is Mercedes is pretty luxurious.
A luxury that you get with these cars.
Absolutely, yeah, right. Yeah. So if you had one thing some advice to improve the Model 3 experience, though, what would that be?
Well, I think, I don't know if you guys have driven the Highland, the new Model 3 yet.
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
But they have, like, the key points that I got out of the Highland where they've, I think they are listening, the fact that the steering's a lot tighter. The Model 3, the one I got at the moment, the steering is very poor. The turning circle is, you need a three-point turn to
I've
do a U-turn.
That. My Model S had a terrible turning circle. Yeah, you're right.
Oh,
yeah.
So the Highland's improved on that. They've also put a little latch under the door. If you notice, it was like a little thing that sticks out. So the rigidity and the cars have felt a bit more solid. They've woken up with the suspension. They've really improved the Tesla. Don't start me with the slidey gear boxy thing.
Remember on the screen? On the screen, yeah. That's silly. So no stalks? You're not a fan of not having stalks? Or?
I'm a fan of having stalks. I just can't put my finger up and down on the screen. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, well, I've actually driven it, and you get used to it. It's not. It's a little bit of an adjustment, but nothing major.
So what I want to know then, just finally, Peter, is you talk about cars a lot. People in your circles at barbecues, at family catch-ups and all that stuff, you get all the questions like we do. What's the number one piece of advice you give to people who are thinking about going EV?
I use analogies when I explain an EV versus an ICE or a petrol-powered car, and that is the charging. You've got your superchargers on the highway, so you'll get in 20, 25 minutes, you'll get 200 to 300 kilometres worth of range.
Mm.
I try then to explain to them, you don't sit there to 100% because 80 to 100 takes another half an hour for an extra, 100 kilometres. I use the analogy like you're filling up a bucket of water.
Yep.
You crank the tap full blast at the start, but then towards the top, you slow the tap down so no water spills.
Yeah. That's exactly what Trevor said. Not long ago.
I've said that in the last couple of weeks, exactly, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I listened, Trev, I listened. Yeah. So that's one thing. But then another thing is, but the charger down the road is free, but that charger will take 8 hours. So what I say to them is, when you fill up petrol, you either have a really big tube that fills 2 litres a second, or you have a really thin tube that only gives you a trickle of petrol every minute or two that will take you 8 hours to fill up your car, but it's free. So are you prepared to let your car sit there for 8 hours for free? Or if you're on the highway, you'll be paying to get like a proper full charge quickly. So you have to break it down and explain to people it's not just like putting in a Bowser, looking at the price on
it's
the sign
reset.
And filling it up.
It's a new mindset for people, and I think that's the challenge, is to continually educate people like you are and we are, just that it isn't the same. It is different, but there's always analogies, and the other analogy we often use is the mobile phone. You take your mobile phone home every night and you charge it.
Charge it.
That's what you
charge
do
overnight
with your electric car, Peter. It's really great to hear your experience. I can't wait to hear that if you're going to get a Macan. I want to hear about it, and I want your review.
I'll reach out, Trev.
Bring it around too. Yeah, take us for a drive.
Yeah. good on you, Peter. Thanks for getting in touch, mate.
No worries. Thank you for having me, guys, and good luck with the new show.
Absolute pleasure, mate. And Peter's podcast is the All Talk Car Podcast.
We're promoting other podcasts on our podcast, aren't we? We're friendly.
The
rising tide lifts all boats.
That's
is
exactly
that what we say?
Right. I'm assuming Peter's going to go absolutely hard on promoting this as well.
I hope so. We get a bit of love from his podcast as well.
Thanks for listening, folks. Back in a sec.
Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars is proudly supported by Uniden, and they've just released the Uniden Dashview 60 Plus. This is their first 5K resolution dash cam. 5K, even more detail, 150-degree wide-angle front-facing camera as well. It's got the Sony Starvis sensor. That means a lot because it works well during the day, during the night, all types of lighting conditions. That's the whole idea of having a dash cam, so I can record everything that happens on the road, and now in 5K resolution. So check that out, the Dash View range. There are others. There's also the iGo Cam range as well. Uniden has got you covered on the road for all your dash cam needs.
Now, Stephen, I reckon I've mentioned more times than I'd like to remember that my future, my home's future, is solar, battery, but in a different way to many other people, because a lot of people are buying solar and they're putting a battery on. You've got an amazing
Sonnen
system where you're part of a kind of a whole community of electricity.
I'm part of a grid,
But being, I'm literally, my solar's going on in the next month, and they keep saying to me, you should put a battery on. And I go, listen, why would I buy a 13-kilowatt battery when I've got two electric cars combined, 160 kilowatts of battery storage in the driveway, certainly every night and on many days of the week?
Yes.
And there's this thing called vehicle to grid. Now, to be very clear, there's a bunch of technologies out there broadly not spoken about. V2L, where you can plug a power point into your car.
Vehicle to load,
Vehicle to grid, V2G, which is you sending power back to the grid, and then V2H. So I found someone who can hopefully help us unpack a bit of this, and it's Professor Stuart White, who's the Director of the Institute of Sustainable Futures at the UTS, University of Technology in Sydney, and I'm pleased to say he joins us on the line right now. Stuart, great to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Now, I am fascinated by this because I'm essentially hedging a lot of my future energy bills on it, to be honest with you. Where are we at with the concept of vehicle to grid in Australia? Because it's not as easy as just buying a wall box on the side of your house. There's government regulation that's required here, isn't there?
Absolutely. And that has been a barrier. There are quite a few barriers stacked up, but that's not to say that they can't be resolved quite quickly if we had the political institutional will. Okay. So, yes, the regulations by the electricity companies is one, but the availability of chargers and the original equipment manufacturers, the car manufacturers, allowing it as well. So there's a bunch of steps that we need to look at in parallel.
And so you actually connected your Nissan Leaf and took advantage of a heat wave, is that right? And you made some money putting power back on the grid from your vehicle.
Yes, absolutely. A very a specific set of circumstances allowed that. And I'm one of only four that I know of that are residential instances of vehicle to grid in Australia. There's two that I know of in South Australia and two in New South Wales. There may be others, so if your listeners know, perhaps let us know. That's the first thing. It's a sort of it's allowed to proceed as a pilot or a trial.
Yep.
There have been a few commercial trials, like a depot, the AGL depot in Canberra and Lake Macquarie City Council. But as you probably know, the Nissan Leaf itself is CHAdeMO, so that's obviously being phased out. And the Wallbox Quasar, Wallbox, the brand that is, not the description, the Wallbox Quasar 1, which is the first one that was made and allowed to be used in Australia, has been discontinued. So in a sense, it's, and then, of course, there's the getting permission from your grid operator. So all of this, I reckon, is going to change. My estimate, it will change in about 6 to 12 months.
We'll see a
massive
That's
shift.
That's true. Because we've already had Wallbox announce the Quasar 2, which will be CCS Type 2 compatible. Because that was originally one of the problems. There was the CHAdeMO was the only technology that allowed this. Now, it is going to be fascinating because I think, Stuart, over the next 6 months to 2 years, people are going to hear about this and go, oh, I want that. But there is a lot of cars that are not built for this. So Tesla, for example, it's not part of the technology. Whereas I know the cars that I have are certainly at a manufacturer level are built this way. I don't know whether the local versions are enabled for it, and I'll be filthy if they're not. But anyway, we'll get to that problem.
Yes.
But But it isn't every electric vehicle, is it?
Yeah.
No, that's right. And there's a question about whether it's technically capable, secondly, whether it's allowed, and certainly not allowed. I mean, that's partly why it was Chatham O's, because it was Nissan Leaf, and Nissan Leaf happens to be Chatham O's. So that's why Wallbox in Spain made those charges for that purpose. But obviously they're looking to a much bigger market, and that's why they've gone with the CCS2. As it happens, we probably won't see the CCS2 in Australia for a while. They'll preference North America and Europe, which is a bit of a downside. But they were demoing it or showing it at the Electrify Everything.
That's right.
Recently, yeah.
So just to be clear, what we're looking at here is the battery in your car potentially powering your home and the excess power sold to the grid. I think...
But for people
who are thinking of buying an EV, that's another selling point. So you're
absolutely,
at the very least, your car could power your home. Forget selling to the grid; that's gravy. But that's the absolute possibility. And you're saying it's already possible, and more people are going to be aware of it the next year or so.
Absolutely, yes, and obviously we want to both publicise, advocate for policy change and advocate for greater availability of charges, but it just makes perfect sense. In fact, anything else doesn't make sense. You know, like when, as you said, why buy a 15-kilowatt-hour stationary battery when cars are underutilised? You know, most average, they do less than 30 kilometres a day. And they're often just parked. And, of course, even if they're parked at work, you could have a bidirectional charger at work. You know, there's not a and the price we're now facing with the adoption rate of solar PV in Australia, rooftop PV, we're the highest in the world, percentage in the world, one-third of houses. And it is such a waste when that energy spills.
Yeah.
And when we have the duck curve at night, and sometimes I'm on an amber dynamic wholesale pricing, so 5:30 at night it goes up to 50 cents, 60 cents. And of course, on February 29th, earlier this year, in that heat wave, it went up to $17, which is the maximum. It can't go higher.
It's like playing the stock market, isn't it? It's like you just hit on a little gain there.
One of the things,
I was sitting on a beach in Western Australia at the time. I should say.
You really played the stock market game. One of the things that's fascinating, though, is again, you're going to find as a part of this the public conversation about it, and generally the rollout of this, will be the naysayers. So I mentioned this to my brother-in-law, who's an electrician, and he said, "But your car will be flat the next morning." I went, "Mate, a battery, a Tesla battery, as I said in the intro, 13 kilowatts, and people are powering their homes at night on that."
My house has got a 10 kilowatt battery.
My 90 kilowatt vehicle, I can set it to say, don't go below 50%. And honestly, 50%, that's 2 days of usage at its peak. So I'm going to be powering my home through a multi-day blackout here. And so the other part of the investment, and I'd love your views on this, Stuart, the cost of an electric car, and I'm pretty vocal about how the parity between electric and petrol is a problem, but I justify that, let's call it $15,000 parity difference, by saying I'm buying a battery for my home. So, in fact, I've just bought a battery for my home as well as a vehicle. Those two things happen to be the one unit, and that's where the cost efficiencies come into this future.
That's absolutely right. It's the margin associated with the cost of the charger, because you're buying – I mean, we're actually the other way around. I mean, my wife and I don't use the car that much. We use our bicycles to get to work and so on. But so we effectively bought a battery, and we get a car for free, which we occasionally use. Whereas most people would buy a car because that's, let's face it, in most Australian cities and certainly in country towns, you need a car to get around, get the kids to sport and school and stuff. So in which case they're buying a car and they're getting a stationary battery, a battery for free, which they can use and defray the cost of, perhaps the extra cost of EVs. Of course, EVs will come down. They'll be parity pretty soon anyway.
Yeah. Do you think the EV manufacturers are not really promoting this benefit at the moment? Like this could be a game changer for some households.
Absolutely, and that's where that is. It's a significant barrier, and that's why the Californian there's some Californian legislators who are proposing, have got a bill before the Californian Senate to require the car manufacturers to have all electric vehicles V2G enabled. I think they've put a date on it of 2027, but that could change in the Senate. But the principle is we need to say to the vehicle manufacturers, no, if you want to sell a car, if you want to manufacture a car, whatever, import a car, you need to make it V2G, open it up for V2G enabled, and more so, you need to make sure that it's interoperable, so there's no closed ecosystem, because there's already a bit of a whiff of that happening with some of the manufacturers. So this is a question of consumer rights, of our energy transition, and of course our low carbon future. So we need to push back against that.
So just thinking out loud about Tesla, have they deliberately not made their Tesla vehicles V2G because they want to sell power walls? Is that what they've done?
Well, maybe in the beginning there was a legitimate concern about the life of the battery. Needless to say, if you you cycle it too much or too often or more over a lifetime, then of course it reduces its life. So in the early days, they might have been worried about that. However, nowadays, there appears to be evidence popping up because there's enough of these systems around the world that we're starting to see that it either makes no difference or in some ways is superior because you can regulate the charging much more. Like you say, you could set it no less than 20, no more than 80%, et cetera, et cetera. So you can get a much more controlled regulation of the battery. So any impact on battery health would be absolutely minimal. I know when we actually do use our car, to go on trips and so on, it means we often push it to the limits. You sort of get to zero because you're trying to get to the next charge point, or you leave it overnight, at a hotel and destination charger, and it's up to 100 and sitting there. So, we know that the V2G will actually give a much better and smoother regulation of the charging regime. So who knows what Tesla's motivations are, but I suspect, it obviously competes with the Powerwall, and often they try and sell both to the same people. Yeah.
Professor, I think the big challenge then is let's pivot this and finally thinking about what next. So I don't want to suggest that we have the greatest platform in the world, but we do have a platform. Who do we need to speak to? Which ministers should we be? Who needs to make these decisions? Like whose doors should we be banging down as constituents and also as broadcasters?
Yeah, well, it's because it touches on so many areas. But yes, you're right. The obviously the minister for energy and climate change,
Mr. Bowen.
Chris Bowen. And yeah.
It's a national thing, not a state thing, because of the grids.
Absolutely, national thing, and it's obviously very. The current government is very supportive of EVs and charging rollout. So this is the next step. And the other thing is the Australian Energy Market Operator and the Australian Energy Markets Commission need to be involved to make sure that we've got the right regulatory framework to enable and allow this, and to say to the electricity, particularly the grid companies, to say, look, we need a common approach to this across Australia. So we're going to have, 20 different utilities having to regulate, approve these things. Yeah. And then we need, of course, the pressure, and this is a whole of government thing, back onto the vehicle manufacturers.
Yes.
To enable it and to make sure it's interoperable. And then we need to get an Australian-made V2G charger.
Exactly.
It's silly that we have to wait in line to get one from Spain.
Yes.
So that's another thing. We've got a history of making inverters, making chargers. We've got good industry.
Yeah.
So let's make them here.
Fascinating. And you're a wealth of knowledge. I think that this is going to be eye-opening for a lot of listeners.
Definitely.
I genuinely think a lot of listeners have glazed over my conversations about this. I think this will open eyes. I think the only thing I need to know is how do I get on the trial? Do I need to become a professor?
can you put a word in for us, Stuart? Can you get us in there?
later in the year, I think there will be some V2G charges possibly being imported, additional countries, possibly out of China.
Please
and
keep us in mind.
Kia 9 will be V2G enabled.
I own a Kia EV9.
So
you're making Trevor look like a genius. He already owns the EV9.
Yeah, there you go.
Stuart, the Cupra Born is V2G compatible, as is the Kia EV9, and I own both. So,
oh well, brilliant.
And,
well,
I'm putting in a 16 kilowatt solar system, so I'm ready. Let's go.
You'll be a super user.
That's it. That's the plan, Stuart. Unbelievably insightful stuff. I appreciate the insights, and I think we'll keep in touch, because I think if there's more to learn, more to do about this, then we should try and stay at the forefront of it. And that's obviously where you sit in this space. So thank you so much for your insights.
Thanks very much.
Cheers. Look, I got to tell you, I think there's people listening going, what?
This could tip people over to buying an EV. This is one of those many factors. And I'm surprised that I asked Stuart as well, what the manufacturers are really underplaying this.
Yeah.
If it's, I know there are a lot. In that interview, I Googled whether my car, and I'm not.
You're not?
V2G is not supported. It says V2G via AC supported. No.
Wow. Yeah. What about DC? Because I think CCS2 is DC. So
no, DC not supported either. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to get involved.
So, yeah. Anyway, only got 2.5 years on the lease, mate. It's all good, mate.
Mate, in 2.5 years, it will be a phone call to your energy provider, and they'll be like, yeah, let's get you involved.
Yes.
The final point I'll make about this before we wrap up the show is, think about, you remember South Australia built that big battery and all this. Yeah. We're building big batteries. Yeah. This is, you know how your battery is a part of a network of hundreds of other batteries, right?
Virtual grid, yeah.
This becomes the same thing. Absolutely, all of us plugging in our cars at night help ensure that the load is distributed. You know, that's all it is.
I'm so surprised that, you know, Minister Chris Bowen is the Minister for Climate Change and Energy and all this sort of stuff. This sort of kills two birds with one stone.
Part of the new vehicle emissions standards that electric vehicles are V2G.
But two birds with one stone, right? So it encourages EV, but also can help you solve your energy problems.
Yes.
Like, hello, why aren't they all over this already?
I will put in another request to the Minister's office. Because
let's get him on the show.
I think we should talk about it. And there's new vehicle emissions to talk about as well.
Yep.
And
talk to get your people to talk to his people.
And if that fails, he's not at all involved in the ministerial of the environment side, but Matt Keane, what used to be my local member.
Yep.
Strong supporter of all this
stuff.
We need to start pushing
someone from the government on there to talk about it, chipping away.
It's not going to happen overnight, but we need to be chipping away so they know that people are talking.
They wouldn't want to talk to the two blokes. Of course they would.
I don't know. Some they might do their research. Could be problematic.
So we're only going to talk to Steve, not Trev.
That could happen. Look, genuinely, really glad we got to talk to Stuart, and a lot to unpack there. Love your feedback on that too. If you weren't aware of it and this is new to you, let us know. If you're like me and hanging out for it, let us know. It's a great conversation. We got lots of great feedback from listeners, and we're going to talk to people a lot over the coming weeks. I feel like we've got the opportunity here, Stephen, on this show to talk to more people more regularly.
Totally.
And that's going to be part of the show.
Just quickly, I actually demoed V2L with MG. And their association with the Rabbitohs. We created a bit of content demonstrating this very feature where the players, we powered a ball cannon and rehab machines through the car.
Yeah.
And they were blown away that you could even do that. Imagine telling them that you can actually power your house with your car as well.
Everyone will say to you, solar's no good when the sun's gone down. Yeah, but then my car's parked in the driveway.
That's right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, you can get in touch with us, techguide.com.au, EFTM.com. We can send us a WhatsApp or an SMS message, 0477 657 657. Stephen, see you next week.
Take care.